And we might think in academia, like, oh, that's like posting about animals or our kids, like that's not professional. I'm this serious academic, but we are serious humans with real hearts. And, you know, whatever you choose, what's that personalized way that make you a little bit more approachable? Because your title behind your name may actually be way more intimidating to your students, to your colleagues, or other potential connections than you may realize.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I want to welcome you to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hi, glad to be here.
And we are here with a guest who just released a book that we can't wait for you to hear about, and that's Josie Alquist. Hi, Josie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and if you didn't get a chance to all of our listeners, if you didn't get a chance to catch part one, please go back and listen to that where she'll introduce her latest book. You can find that episode on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, and check out some related resources on digitaltolearn.com, and that's a numerical two. But for now, we're going to get going with part two, Josie Alquist, Digital to Learn.
So in your visits to various campuses, are you observing any places where faculty are systematically teaching their students about those very same things?
I would love to see that throughout disciplines.
Absolutely.
It shouldn't just live in the comm department or their freshman seminar. What does it look like to be a dentist now with an Instagram account? Or, you know, like every single field, it's relevant. I mean, I use medical examples because many times they have guiding principles and ethics that actually inform what the expectations are within someone that is a doctor or a nurse. Mm-hmm. But a lot of other fields, and higher education is one of them, we don't have a rule book. Like it's very gray based on the institution you work at. You might have a handful of leaders that are kind of role modeling, guiding the way, but then there might be another institution that isn't kind of going into those innovative ways in a variety of ways, or also might be more conservative. And if one was to speak up or use tools in their courses, they're going to get more pushback. So you really have to get a sense of campus culture a little bit in digital terms.
When you mentioned dentists, I had this fear that my dentist was going to post on Instagram that I don't actually floss as often as they say I do.
Who does, Brad? That's my philosophy. Who does?
Somewhere, some course teaches them to shame about flossing.
You have to leave the dentist office feeling bad about yourself.
That's true. That's true.
Here's another bag of floss.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. I'll add that to my drawer.
Oh, gosh. So true.
So if there was a certain audience out there of educators or student affairs professionals or administrators, who is it that you really hope reads this book?
Well, I did write it with the hopes that anyone could pick it up in education to apply it from a grad school course, but also to a campus president. And what I do know about higher education, because of our like bureaucracies and kind of some old school ways that we do things, is we do need to see our top leaders role modeling some of these things. So executives are going to see themselves in lots of examples of who I'm seeing as digital leaders in higher ed based on their position. But I also wanted to make sure I included mid-level professionals who I feel like have a very difficult navigation and how they may not have as many privileges as a president or even as a faculty member in how they can use their voice in spaces. And I would say also, like coming from a student affairs background, the book, especially if you're trying to figure out how do I intentionally use these tools with the intent of connecting with students. That's a lot of my lens and research comes from that perspective. And so I think you'll find some benefits in that population.
I love that you have that student affairs background to offer. And yet I know that you speak with higher ed executives every day. So that blend of voices that you've heard and you've experienced is just excellent coming into this book. So you made this major career transition. You finished your doctorate, which is awesome. What led you then to decide, I'm going to write a book?
Well, I know in these pandemic times, we start to look at our life, right? And what we're going to do next. And so many people are making these like major life changes. And there's some things in life that are so difficult to make that choice or to like know what's next. And there's been a handful of things that were so for sure for me. There was just some clear voice. Mm-hmm. And when the day I met my husband, I knew from a young age that I'd get my doctorate and then that I would write my own book. So but I had to remind myself in some of the dark days of writing and editing. But the other piece too, and honestly, the podcast feeds into this as well, is I started to hear so many stories from the podcast or people I would meet. And the book is full of so many stories to back up the framework and philosophy of digital leadership that it started to just become this orchestra that I wanted to be the vehicle to tell that.
Yeah.
As you described the book, I can picture a group of faculty members sitting around reading the book and then talking about it and then thinking about, okay, how are we applying this in our culture? How are we transmitting this to our students?
I include exercises as the educator that I am that we have. And then I know a lot of books you read and there's exercises, you just like scroll past them. Yeah. But they are also going to live on my website. So you can print them off. You could do it as an experiential part of your training and development or conversations. And part of it is because of my human development perspective, we talk about history in the past, because a lot of times our sometimes negative perceptions of tools is from things that happened in the past to then think about what possibilities we can move forward with in the future. So I really do hope that it is a tool that isn't just this thing that you, you know, like get through and then remove from your Kindle, download. that even though the tools are going to change, I really hope the philosophy and framework can be a solid guide for years to come.
You gave us a preview of one chapter, and then you shared that there are examples throughout the book. What else can readers expect from the book?
There is also a community behind the book, because I talk about digital community in leadership, even as it is currently written, never is in a vacuum. You are using your influence to connect with followers, and you could say the connections or subscribers who are all working towards a common cause. And for us, higher education, that could be one of those things. And so the community that I've created is on a platform called Mighty Networks, which is like a Facebook group, but without like the ethical dilemmas of Facebook. And so if you're a reader or you're hope one day you're going to get the book, we can drop the links in the notes to this episode. Mm-hmm. And the community is called the Digital Leadership Network. And we're just going to have almost like book club conversations in there. Nice. The features that are in the book are going to be available for questions and interactions. I really want it to make it a space again to bring the book alive, that it's not just something on paper that... Because again, it's not like a black and white thing. We want to be able to navigate together and show examples of something someone's done on a certain platform. So I hope, again, that's something that the book can bring out for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, just in this brief conversation, it's obvious to me that you are living out what you've written in the book.
Well, I think that is what it forces us to think about, is Well, A, am I practicing what I preach? Because when we tell, for example, let's say students or our teams to do X, Y, Z, you're always thinking about how am I also living out my values and building community? So it was a cycle of a process of where am I sitting with this? Because in the doc program, they say when you think about your research topic, it also is me search. You're like, well, what am I potentially really struggling with? Or like, how's my identity forming my research questions? And I'll be honest, it is coming from Wyoming because we are Wyoming nice. I struggle with conflict. I don't like to get into it with people in digital spaces or in physical spaces. And I know we need dialogue and debate in all types of spaces. So that's been a personal exploration and skill set for me that I also, you know, like have a section in the book about that. And, you know, as we move closer into an election and whatever post-election looks like. And so there are stories from my experiences in the book too. So you don't feel like it's some robot talking to you. No robots allowed.
Well, I've seen your website, your LinkedIn, your Twitter, and I'm sure it is a lot of pressure speaking on social media to everyone and then having your own to be able to maintain that. But there is a sense of purpose when you visit your sites as opposed to others. I hope that all of our listeners and your readers have an opportunity to follow you on social media so they can get a sense of how you're able to share your story and identity on social platforms. You do a great job.
Well, thank you. I also hope people get that I aim for purpose, but it's not going to be perfect. And I documented my book journey, which started 4 years ago. Like there were some hard days and you know, like I'm not taking a selfie of me under my desk crying, right? But like, I'm letting people know like this is what happened because I also get reached out to a lot by people that want to write a book. And these are things I would want you to know about that process or that journey. And that is a little bit of the skills of digital storytelling is we are documenting our process. We don't need to like take photos of our food unless you're a foodie and love that. And that's totally fine. But because we can learn from each other and you'll be surprised by just those. And I call it personalization, not personal or professional. Those little things that you can share out onto the internet are like reaching out a hand for a handshake. So for example, like we had to say goodbye to our cat this last spring. She lived many a years. And so a flood of people after I posted about that came in, and then even a new connection of, you asked about cats earlier, Brad, like now I have this new colleague because it was about me posting about my cat. And we might think in academia, like, oh, that's like, posting about animals or our kids, like that's not professional. I'm this serious academic, but we are serious humans with real hearts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever you choose, what's that personalized way that make you a little bit more approachable? Because your title behind your name may actually be way more intimidating to your students, to your colleagues or other potential connections than you may realize. Mm-hmm. And so again, I try to share examples of that in the book too.
It's great insight.
Two of the best things about doing this podcast have been that we get to chat with some really nice people who have really interesting stories. And then secondly, those same people are some of the brightest and most visionary people in the world. And you fit into both those categories. Mm-hmm. As you look toward the future of higher ed and technology and learning, where all those things intersect, what kind of things might we expect in the future?
I think we are going to see it a commonplace for a campus leader to be accessible and approachable in digital spaces. And it doesn't have to be all of them, but there's enough happening right now where I see a president jump on TikTok to talk about Black Lives Matter, or another provost that goes into Instagram Live to answer student questions about an email that they just sent out. And so that accessibility on tools that we know where our people are, and no matter what the tool is going to change to be, I think it is a trend that I hope to see and I do expect to see. And so as you think about if you want to move forward into leadership, start doing that reflection now about what that would look like for you in your life and the tool that would best fit for your people.
Recently, our president at Indiana Wesleyan did a video that he included in an email where he was just recognizing some issues that we need to deal with in a very vulnerable way. And it's amazing how favorably people responded to that. Not only, yes, you're right, we need to talk about those issues, but also his willingness to take that risk. It was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is beautiful that the risk, the vulnerability that it does, I'm sure it did not need to be this like Emmy winning video production. It can just be you speaking to the camera and showing that emotion, where sometimes the written word in an email doesn't communicate. And especially when we talk about like topics that have happened this last year, you really need to be aware of what that tone is and the best mode and modality to communicate that.
Absolutely.
I'm going to ask you that obnoxious question. You know, sometimes when a person has one child, and as soon as you have that child, you get the question, are you having child number two? And you're like, seriously? But I'm going to go ahead and ask you, is there a book two in Josie's future, in our future, you think?
Yes, I've gotten that question a lot. It is the question you get, like when you get married, when you... And so my kind of squirrel around answer is that the next thing for me is I need to meet my niece who was born the week before we went into quarantine.
Oh.
I need to figure out how the heck to get to her safely and spend good amounts of Auntie Josie time with both my nieces. So that is my answer. But there's always stuff that I am cooking up. I have a course that I'm working on that's going to be connected to the book.
Excellent.
For those that are really looking to then take this action and move through a process. So hopefully that will be out toward the end of October. And I mean, I've got different digital communities that I have that you can link to the show. So yeah, I'm always instigating something over here.
Well, how dare I even ask that? Because this book is hot off the press and we need to focus on it, promote it, get people connected.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what we're gonna do. So awesome. Thank you for being here with us. It's been a joy. We love talking with you. And
good. My pleasure.
And we will definitely want to have you back.
Yeah, let's do it. Maybe I will have an answer by then of the next one.
Well, we want to break the news here on this podcast.
Okay, so. I'll save it, yeah.
Okay. Josie, right. It's been so much fun having you on the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm so glad this finally came together.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.